but we're much better than what we showed against them, and this is what we're going to show them tonight. No doubt in my head. Let's go, guys. Go.
Listening to the 90 Plus Podcast. Here's your hosts, Ben Righetti and Sebastian Pereira.
All right, welcome to the 90 Plus Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Righetti, as always, joined by my wonderful co-host, Sebastian Pereira, bringing you episode 35, which is going to sound a little bit different. We've changed it up a little bit for this one, and I think it's for a good reason, a good cause here. We did have Kira McCormack on the show. We'll break who that down is in just a second. But yeah, it's a little bit of a longer interview. We just finished recording it with her just a minute ago. We're recording the intro afterwards. But yeah, it's a great chat. 100%. You guys are going to want to listen to this one right the way through. So in light of the recent news surrounding former Canadian women's national team and Whitecaps women's coach Bob Bereda being handed a total of 9 sexual assault charges from, you know, spanning over 2 decades, we're honored to present to you guys our interview of Kira McCormack. She's really been just the ringleader and the figurehead for this movement in an attempt to shine light on the situation, to get the media's attention on it, to try figure out a way of the club to, right this wrong, kind of figure out a way to move and move forward and improve on this situation. So yeah, we just had a chat with her. Definitely, it's a little bit of a different tone from most of our previous, interviews and podcasts, but this is definitely one that we wanted to kind of jump on and really sort of get a lot out of. So I hand it over now to my co-host Sebastian for a quick little breakdown of what we're going to be talking about.
Yeah, so just some background info for you guys, just in case you aren't familiar with the situation. So back in 2008, unfortunately, Kira and a couple of her teammates were sexually victimized by the head coach at the time of that Whitecaps women's team, Bob Bereda. And this eventually led to fans walking out of games in 2019, not only at BC Place, but at Bank of California Stadium, at Providence Park. So those are two big MLS stadiums that walked out in support of Kira's movement. And yeah, it's obviously not okay. We're fully behind this movement here at 90 Plus. And we also get into a 2017 case where two male members of the Whitecaps residency team sexually assaulted another teammate that eventually led to charges as well. And we're going to talk about how the club dealt with both of these situations. So it's definitely an interesting interview where we get a sense of Kira's story, how she's building this movement, and how brave she's been in leading the movement as well. We commend her so much for what she's been able to do. And it was truly an honor to have her on. It's a great interview, and we thoroughly recommend you go through it all the way, just to educate yourself on the situation and what's going on. Some things are bigger than football, and this is definitely one of those things. So without further ado, here's our interview with Kira McCormack.
All right, we are joined now by Kira McCormack, a vital figure piece in all the investigations and everything that have been surrounding the club, as you just heard in our intro there. Kira, welcome to the 90 Plus Podcast. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Yeah. Anytime. It's, obviously it's, with everything that's come to light in the last couple of days and everything, it's a big topic and something that, people might not completely know the story of, or it's difficult to sort of get the truth behind a lot of things. So that's sort of what we're hoping to bring out at least partially over the next 45 minutes or so.
No, I appreciate the opportunity to do that. So thanks, guys.
All right. Well, I think there's sort of no better place to start than go back to the beginning. So sort of back in your time, in your playing days, can you sort of set the scene of what it was like to be a young Canadian woman wanting to play for the national team? You're in Vancouver, and how those sort of paths led to all the power falling to Bob Bereda?
So it was kind of, at the time, so I had gone to university down in the US, and then I had gone over to Europe and actually played in a Champions League final. And so I was at a really good club over there. And so I sort of had like a little bit of the, you know, like a professionalism type of understanding and experience in other environments when I came back to Vancouver in 2004 was when I first came back from Denmark, where I had played right after university. And so the way that it was set up, you know, so I had come from Europe where like there's lots of different clubs, and like if a player performs well, and you know, you'd see players that came from like the second division up to the top division, and then out of nowhere they were the leading goal scorer, and then they climbed their way onto the national team, you know, and there was, you know, 12 teams in the top league and obviously teams below that and stuff. And so it kind of spread the power out, I guess you could say, where there wasn't, it wasn't really centralized. It was like a league, you pick the best players, that kind of how it worked. And so when I came back to Vancouver, you know, pretty much what had happened was that Greg Kerfoot, who's just still the owner of the Whitecaps, he had given the national team a lot of money. Like, I think, I want to say it was like $1 million or so. It was a significant amount of money. And basically what ended up happening was that all the players centralized to Vancouver. The Whitecaps, obviously Kerfoot owned the Whitecaps as well. So that was kind of tied in with the national team. And so that was kind of like the first step in terms of a club team being aligned with the national team. And like that immediately to me as a player was kind of a red flag, because all of a sudden that pathway that I'd seen in other countries that exists everywhere was just down to one club team. And that was the kind of the team you were either sort of like a clear, you know, figure to make the national team, you know, already, you'd made the team already, or you were a player that were trying to, you know, vie for a spot to get in. And the Whitecaps then kind of became the team you had to play on if you wanted to get considered for the national team. And so, and then obviously then the U20 team was training for World Cups, and they were based in Vancouver as well. So there was a lot of overlap between those three teams. So you'd have players playing on the Whitecaps and the national team, or the U20 team and the Whitecaps, or even going between all three teams. And so, so that meant sort of like the player pool was pretty, you know, we all knew each other really well. And so that was kind of, that sort of set the stage, you know, just from a structural perspective of how this was able to happen and why he had so much power. Because by the time 2006, 2007 rolled around, he was the head coach of the Whitecaps, the head coach of the under 20 national team, and the assistant coach with the full national team. So basically he was kind of the voice that would be saying, you know, this player from the Whitecaps or this player from the U20 team deserves an opportunity, because he was overseeing those two teams. And I had had him as a coach, you know, in my early 20s and even back into high school. I'd had him as a coach just even informally in those sorts of environments. And I just saw a clear change in his behavior once he kind of garnered all that power. And it was kind of one of those things where there was nowhere to go, you know, like that was, there was no other club team to go to. You were either, you know, you were either on the Whitecaps and, you know, trying to make the national team, or you weren't, you know, unless of course, like I said, if you were lucky enough to have established yourself as a national team player prior to that kind of convergence of those three teams. So for me, like I'd been over in Europe, I'd obviously played at a super high level over in Europe. The national team was my goal. I was from Vancouver, so it was like, you know, nice to be able to be in my hometown. So that's kind of how I landed in that pool of players in that environment.
And sort of just expanding on that a little bit, how did the, so that situation, you know, all roads lead to Vancouver sort of situation, how did that enable Bereda to sort of be in the position that he was, and the kind of almost use that to his advantage in a way? How did he sort of go about that?
You know, there was things that I felt were, you know, around 2005, we'd actually planned, you know, we were starting to kind of see that, you know, at that time we had like Christine Sinclair, Andrea Neal, who was a big player on the national team at the time, Carl Lang, who was a big player on the national team, Aaron McLeod. Like we had these amazing players that were on the Whitecaps at the time. And, you know, we basically started to kind of say to ourselves, you know, there's, you know, we were attracting a lot of fans to games, and like the men's were as well, right? But we were at that time attracting as many, like really close to the number of fans as the men's team. And so that was kind of, I think, like the starting point for us, where we started to sort of say, like, we kind of had like organized almost a little union meeting in 2005. And You know, we were going to discuss even possibly striking just because, you know, we weren't getting paid anything and we knew people on the men's team and their worst player was getting, you know, $1,500 a month and our best player was driving from Squamish and paying for her gas, you know? And so I think that that was kind of, again, where there was like a little bit of like unrest within the player group and just almost starting to, you know, again, I think as female athletes, a lot of the times, like you're taught to be so grateful for everything that you're getting, you know? And I think at that point was when we, there was almost kind of like a rumbling of asserting ourselves. And then Bob Lenarduzzi somehow got wind of that the night that we were having the union meeting or whatever you want to call it after practice. Bob Lenarduzzi showed up at practice and he never had come to practice before. And he was saying, you know, they were so happy with how we had, you know, done and what we were doing for the club and that they were going to give all these, you know, stipends. I think the highest stipend was like $425 down. Like there was another stipend, like another layer that was like 300 and then another level that was like 125. So that kind of immediately for all of us, like it just changed the tone of like, oh my gosh, there's people like, you know, there's like rats within the group almost that are like giving a heads up and oh my gosh, I don't want to be. And actually at that point there was sort of a bit of a ringleader and her playing time again, like significantly dropped after that situation. So, you know, so in that environment, like the Whitecaps also were like inappropriately using us to like drive all over Vancouver and do all these appearances for them. And, you know, just all this stuff, again, like I said, where I was, you know, mid twenties and it just was starting to feel like just not a good environment where we didn't have a voice. And so that was the part of it, you know, in terms of, you know, again, they were using us like for the club and not compensating us at all. And, you know, so I think that that sort of was the start for me, at least, of kind of being like, this is not like a solid environment, but same thing where it's like, I have nowhere else to go. And these are the people that I have to keep happy if I want to make the national team, which is what I've given up everything to do, you know? And so, yeah. So then moving into like 2006, 2007. Yeah. That was kind of, again, like I said, that sort of centralized power was that was kind of, again, just the environment where, I just started to feel, you know, there were younger players that would confide in me and they were being pressured to miss school, to come to practice and sort of having their like under 20 spots threatened if they didn't. And you know, another friend of mine, I listened in the car with her on the way to practice where like Bob berated her for like, not wanting to live in basically a closet for the summer. And like, you know, we had to pull over and she was hysterically crying. And like, there was just all these things starting to go around me where I'm like, this just is not right, you know? But like I said, but then juxtaposed with like, but this is where I have to be if I want to make the national team. And like, what am I going to do? You know? So I think that, yeah, that kind of gives you an idea of like what that sort of power that he had, how that kind of manifested from like an environment perspective.
You came forward last year. And I mean, a lot of the community thanks you for all the work you've done to raise awareness for this subject. We here at 90 Plus, of course, are very thankful for the work you've done. And you mentioned earlier, it's not just you, there's even like a small coalition of you guys that's kind of trying to lead this movement as well. So how was it just trying to come out of trying to, I guess, tell the story and letting the people know, like, this is something that has to change and that ultimately leads to fans protesting at games. So how was that process for you trying to come out and summoning the courage to do so, to come forward?
You know, I think one of the things I think when you're an elite athlete, you're just so tough, you know, like you kind of just have to be in that environment. And I think, you know, I ended up standing up to him and I sort of hit a fork in the road where I'm like, I either have to compromise my integrity and you know, keep my mouth shut and watch all this like emotional abuse essentially going on around me, or I need to just stand up for everybody and get out of here, you know? And I knew I had an Irish passport. So like that allowed me to like get out and still play internationally, which like a lot of my friends who stood up through those years didn't have that opportunity and their soccer careers just kind of ended. So in that sort of way that I was lucky, but that being said as well, you know, and like, again, when you're in that situation as an athlete, and so much of what I did, you know, through my playing career was just like, you take a punch to the face and you just have to keep going. And so I never really like, it just was a crappy thing that happened, but I made the best of it. I had a great experience playing for Ireland and I just tried to move on, you know? But then, like I said, we then heard like 3 months after. So like, you know, they told us when they had this investigation that one of the things they said when they were firing or like, you know, well, yeah, they were essentially fired him, was that he wouldn't play or he wouldn't be a coach anymore. So again, for us having gone through all of this, it was like, okay, well, relief, you know, there's a point to what we've been through. He's not going to be on the field again. And then 3 months later, again, like I said, the playing group was a really tight group of girls that, you know, we'd played together for a long time. And so then through the grapevine, it was like, oh my gosh, I heard or I saw Bob coaching. And we were all just like, what the heck? And then also too, like the Whitecaps and Canada Soccer had framed his departure as like a mutual parting of ways. So like that, obviously then we all, when that, we saw that come out, kind of were like, what do you mean mutual parting of ways? Like that's not a accurate depiction of what's happened. And that's also allowing him back into the community without, you know, any kind of consequence or anyone knowing what's gone on. And that was kind of, again, the excuse that got brought up by a lot of people when you'd sort of say something like people knew the story, but it was like, oh, well, but it was a mutual parting of ways and, you know, nothing else was said kind of thing. So for me, like, to be honest, like I hated Vancouver. Like I have had a really hard time with, you know, because like I said, like the city is just filled with so many awful memories of like my soccer experience and just this like nasty cloud of this whole situation. And I just have really struggled even like wanting to be like living in Vancouver. And I, you know, I lived outside of Vancouver for a good part of the last decade. And yeah. And I think for me, like I just, it weighed on me like so heavily. And I think part of it was like my love for soccer and just seeing somebody use that as a weapon against me and my friends. And then just seeing that like he was back on the field and knowing what he'd been accused of and every, you know, all the upper brass of like the Whitecaps and Canada Soccer, knowing what he had done and then seeing him on the field with teenage girls and knowing how wrong that was and trying to, you know, like we added up how many times we tried to report it. And it was something like 30 times that we tried to like come forward over the last decade between like two or three of us. And so all those things are just, you know, and in retrospect now, since I've written the blog and everything's unfolded, like it was a lot of trauma that I had was carrying around that just felt like really being stuck in my life and not, you know, just not feeling like I could move forward and not really understanding why, but like knowing that this was such a, like a, you know, a burden on my heart, if you want to say, like, and so I just hit the point, like the, you know, it was kind of out of nowhere. Like the Larry Nassar case with the USA Gymnastics happened in 2018. And I listened to the victim impact statements and like, it was like, I was so struck by how similar the things they were talking about like the environment that they, you know, like just all the kind of cover up and how, you know, they just were innocently there to reach the highest level. And this coach or the trainer, Larry Nassar, was this, you know, great, you know, trainer. And, you know, and it just all of these things that were very triggering, like where it was so similar to things that I was feeling and that I felt at the time. And I kind of, it almost was like reaffirming that like, I'm not crazy, because I think, like I said, when you try to report something 30 times and no one's like, gives a crap enough to do anything about it, you start to question like, is this even a big deal? Like, am I overreacting? Like, what's the matter? So that was a big turning point for me where I felt like I'm not crazy. Like these people are being taken seriously. And this sounds very similar in terms of how they're feeling in the environment that they were in. And then in 2019, there was a report that came out talking about abuse in sport. And that was kind of, again, the first time for me that I saw in Canadian media anything addressed about abuse in sport. And so that was sort of for me where I'm like, okay, like there's people listening, like the Me Too movement had sort of happened. And there was like, you know, people that came forward weren't sort of like victimized again. Do you know what I mean? And so I felt like, okay, like there's now an opportunity to come forward and maybe people will be like a little more open to it. But like I said, I knew I had gone to the media, like I talked to so many different people in the media who didn't do anything or they couldn't do anything because it wasn't a victim coming forward or whatever, that I kind of was just like, I'm either going to have to do this on my own or this is just not going to happen. And then I went to, you know, after that CBC article that I read, I went down to Whole Foods by my house and I just started writing out the whole story of what happened. And I had saved everything over the years. And so I had, you know, and I just knew, I'm like, I'm going to have one shot to do this. Like, I have to, you think about all the ways that like victims get discredited, like, oh, she's emotional. Oh, she's bitter because she didn't make the national team or all those sorts of things. And I just was like, I knew the facts were on my side. I knew the truth was on my side. And I just was like, I have to write this as factual as possible and like not insert my opinion and just put in evidence and like just get this story out there like once and for all, and then whatever happens happens. But I still wasn't positive I was gonna do it, just because obviously I knew it was a very large accusation that I was putting out there. And even in the past when I'd spoken to friends who were lawyers or whatever, they were all just kind of worried for me in a way, and it just always kind of made me nervous. But I was always like, I'm telling the truth. I know that this is the truth. Everyone around me knows it's the truth. It has to count for something, you know? So that night that I wrote, I literally sat in Whole Foods for 6 hours writing the blog. And then I was coming out, and then I was like, oh, I feel like some cookies. So I went back to Whole Foods and got like 2 cookies. And I was in the checkout line, and there was this girl standing behind me. And, you know, it's like there's like 10 checkout lines at Whole Foods. And she was kind of looking at me. And then finally she's like, I'm sorry if this is weird, but are you Kira McCormack? And I said, I am. Like, what's your name? And she told me her name. And she said, like, oh, you know, I'm 10 years younger than you. I played on the youth national team. And I was like, oh, yeah, like, I know who you are. Like, we have all these mutual friends. And anyway, so we were chatting. And I said to her, I was like, you know, it's really weird running into you. I've been writing this blog all day. Did you ever have Bob Berarda as your coach? And she started to get like teary and kind of started almost to cry. And she's just like, here, I've been in therapy the last 2 years because of that guy. And I was just blown away. I was like, you know, what are the chances? And then we spoke afterwards, and, you know, she never went into that Whole Foods. She felt compelled to walk in that day. She didn't need anything. She bought a random bar of soap. There was 10 checkout lines, and she just happened to be standing behind me in line. And it was almost like, it was just one of those things where I'm like, what, like, I'm so scared of whatever's going to happen after I write the blog, but just, there could not be a clearer sign from the universe. Like, you need to, like, what are the chances, right? That like the day that I write the blog, that interaction happens like minutes after I finish writing it. And so that was kind of for me where I'm like, all right, like I'm jumping off this cliff, and if I'm meant to die, I'm going to die. But like, it would just be even, you know, I just can't not do it now, because that's just such a sign that I'm supposed to. So that was kind of the push over the cliff that I needed to finally like publish the blog.
What a story. Wow. That's a talk about fate.
It was crazy.
Yeah. We'll talk a little bit later on about media and the coverage of this story, but you kind of led into it a bit when you heard, you know, Bob Berarda, he was back out on fields in the Lower Mainland coaching at clubs. He was a coach up, you know, just a few years ago at the very club I was a coach at. I played at throughout all my childhood. I volunteered, refereed there at Coastal FC.
Oh,
and, yeah, so once this story kind of came out and I found out that, you know, he was a coach, you know, of an age only, you know, a couple of years different from my own, it was really just kind of an eye-opener of how in the community a man like this still is. So, and obviously you said you were shocked and, you know, dumbfounded by when you and all your teammates heard the news that, you know, he's still out coaching young girls and everything. So if Canada and BC Soccer were listening to this podcast right now, what would you say to them about that?
Like, I mean, I just cannot even fathom to be in charge of BC Soccer and Canada Soccer and know, like, they knew, you know, 2017, you know, a couple of players went in with a police report and showed them, 2 people that were senior in BC Soccer, nothing got done. Obviously, Canada Soccer was involved in the investigation in 2008 and knew exactly why they let him go from a U20 national team 6 weeks before a World Cup. You know, I mean, I don't know. I just don't even have the words to comprehend being that, just to disregard, literally, it's just like throwing a tiger into like a cage of like defenseless children, you know what I mean? How do you sleep at night? You know, I just think it's obviously, I know there's like legal reasons why they're not going to come out and say, you know, we're sorry, because obviously then they're culpable and they could be, you know, anything that's happened legally, like they have liability for, but it's just, I don't know. That's actually, no one's ever asked me that before, and I don't really have a good answer. I just don't even know. I don't even know what I would say to them. How do you sleep at night? Like, what's the secret? Because it's just so egregious and such just so disrespectful to the players you're supposed to be representing. Like, I don't even have words for it.
You kind of touched on it a bit in the last two questions, but there was obviously another situation in 2017 involving two academy players. And as Ben mentioned, kind of his connection to kind of finding out that this man was out there still coaching when he rightfully shouldn't be. I kind of have a similar experience. It's not really with Bob, but it was kind of with the organization and how they kind of didn't do a job, you know, explaining the situation in the academy. And I was going to Burnaby Central at the time, the school where the academy players attended. And that's that's where all the Whitecaps Academy guys would go to school, and girls as well. That's where all the Whitecaps Academy students would go. I've had a pleasure of, you know, seeing Alfonso Davies walk down the hallway and Jordan Heidema. So, you know, I'll always mention that. But on the other side of that, these two academy boys were also walking down the hallway, the same one that I was walking through. And so when that situation kind of came out, it was very, like, very discreet and stuff like that. Not too many people knew about it. And then word kind of spread around the school that, like, oh, this situation happened with these two academy boys. And the Caps didn't really, like, go into it much further than, like, okay, this happened and that's it. And after you kind of wrote the blog that you've mentioned, you urged the boy's mother, the one who was unfortunately put in that situation, to call the police, and that eventually led to the players being charged within days. So what was that situation like for you, seeing that in 9 years almost nothing had changed in terms of the club protocols and handling these situations? Like, I can even say, like, on the school side of Burnaby Central, they really, like, toned the situation down, and it should have been handled a lot quicker than what it was, you know, handled. Like, so what was it like for you?
Yeah, well, like I said, like, that was another, again, when you're sort of actively silenced and you're trying to speak up and you're sort of, you know, whatever, pushed to the side, I guess, you kind of, again, you know, part of what I've realized that, like, the trauma of it is, like, you know, you just start to, it's like being gaslit. Like, you're like, again, is this, maybe this isn't a big deal. Like, maybe I'm imagining that this is not right, or like, yeah. And I think for me, you know, when I saw that 2017 situation and the mom went on, I think it was Global, and her, you know, she was just like, her, everything was, like, disguised, her voice and her appearance and everything. But I listened to the story and I, you know, it was like, yep, the, you know, the team told me that they were handling it internally and that they were going to, you know, bring in a mediator. And I just was listening and I just was like, I cannot, this is literally like the playbook. Like, this is exactly what happened. And, you know, it involved sexual allegations against underage players, you know. And but the thing was, is that in 2008, obviously there was no parents around, and here's an adult mother that obviously can see through the BS. And, you know, I think she's a hero. Like, that mom is a hero, like, because, you know, they tried to silence her. Obviously, like, you know, her son is trying to play at the highest level like everybody else. And, you know, but, like, you know, just to have that kind of courage that mom had to call the police when, like, they were actively trying to tell her not to. And I say that, so just to finish that sort of part of it, like, that for me was, again, affirming to be like, wow, like, this is actually, well, this is a thing that they obviously try and do. And the mom did call the police and the boys were charged, like, within, like, hours, or, you know, a day or something. You know, so obviously, like, we didn't have a mother that was smart enough to see through the BS back in our day. So, yeah, my first thought was like, wow, like, and just knowing, again, the amount that's at stake and the amount of power that the Whitecaps have in the system, I was like, what a mom to do that, you know what I mean? And just so much respect for her. And then when we were in the middle of the whole situation, you know, again, because like you said, it all got brushed under the rug really quickly. And that was the only sort of like, you know, like only little call for help in any capacity that kind of came out of their sort of like carefully crafted message around the whole thing. So I actually went like on a full private investigator like hunt, and I, you know, I didn't have much information to go on, but I am, you know, pretty good at like internet stalking. No, I'm just joking, but I, you know, I used the limited information that I had and ended up finding the mom. And the poor woman, I just came out of nowhere and sent her a message and anyways, asked her if she would speak with me. And, you know, I spoke to her for 5 hours and I got the entire story and I was horrified. Like I was horrified. And, you know, so many of the things that she described in terms of like how the whole situation like made her and her family feel, like it just all, I just felt like I was speaking to a kindred spirit, because it's exactly, you know, what the, all the sorts of things that have happened, you know, like in terms, yeah, just again, like just almost shocked that people can behave in that way, the way that the Whitecaps did. And again, very disturbing that, you know, people that like names of people that she was dealing with in her situation were exactly the same people we were dealing with in our situation. You know, I guess what it was 2008. Yeah. So like 9 years before, it was exactly the same people, same game plan, same everything. And then I followed up with, again, I tracked down another mom that had a son that was in the locker room at the time. And I talked to her and I got her story, obviously, like just totally separately. And, you know, just the same things, right? Like big promises, big excitement to, you know, play with the Whitecaps at the highest level. Like this is the pathway to play for Canada and all the big dreams. And then getting into the environment and just seeing like, just how like rotten it is. And you know, and again, I think something that's important to say, you know, I know a lot of people that are coaches within the Whitecaps organization. Like there's a lot of tremendous people that I have so much respect for that are coaches in the Whitecaps system. But the fact is that if anything happens, it goes to that front office, like upper echelon. And it's the same people from 2008, 2017. And if something happens in 2020, like it's the same people that everybody has to go to. And like I said, the Whitecaps are still a very key piece of the pathway to get to play for the national team. And so as far as I'm concerned, like those same people are in charge. And if something happens again, you know, like, what's going to be different? Nothing's going to be different. There's no oversight. There's nobody. And to be honest, like after handling two serious situations in such a disgraceful manner, like those people should be nowhere near any like upper echelon of any soccer team involving children. And I feel like very strongly about that, because I mean, it's just like, yeah, like it's, they flat out covered up, you know, sexual misconduct, and that's not right. You know, I just don't think you should be anywhere near kids or decision-making with young adults, young athletes, when you've done those sorts of things. That's just my opinion, but you know, like maybe I'm crazy. I don't know, but that's just my feelings towards it.
Well, I know your opinions, you know, they're important. They've gained a lot of, you know, attention and viewership over the last little while. So yeah, I know your opinions and everything that you've said, it's important. People appreciate the work you've done. So you just touched on there, the sort of the upper echelon, you know, the front office, the executives around the club of the Whitecaps. You know, it's been mostly pretty much the same from back in 2008 to, you know, 2020 now. Can you address the lack of communication from the club to everyone involved in the report and about the investigation and about Bob Rader's dismissal from the team, and just sort of where the sort of eerie, you know, gray area sort of set in around the club, and just sort of expand on that a little bit more.
Yeah. So, I mean, talking about the quote unquote investigation from 2008, you know, when that happened, I feel like I was, you know, very trusting as anyone would be. And obviously I didn't really have experience in being that kind of situation before. So you sort of are just, you know, you're always taught to like trust the authorities, I guess, if you want to say. And so, you know, we were told to like, we'd be talking to a mediator. And so, again, I just had sort of the idea that this is the protocol, right? And in retrospect, after like looking back at everything and, you know, again, sort of being a little bit older and wiser the last bunch of years, we came to find out that, it was actually a lawyer that they hired in 2008. And then last year, during all this stuff happening, I had a random person reach out to me that told me and sent me evidence that that Ann Chopra, who was the, you know, quote unquote mediator, the independent mediator that they presented to us, was actually, her brother was in business with Bob Berarda's brother. And, you know, so that's like, you know, not even is that just a person on someone's payroll. Now you've got someone that has a direct connection to the perpetrator that you're sharing confidential information with. And, you know, to this day, we've never, I know the media was kind of breathing down her back for a while. And I think I read somewhere that there was a non-disclosure, which again is about accusations of the magnitude that were presented. So that's, you know, that obviously is, you know, when they say like not good communication with the players, I mean, like, yeah, like how about you hire a mediator that doesn't have connections to the perpetrator as like a first step in building some trust, you know? But anyways, so that was kind of how 2008 went down. My interaction with her was that I like gave her the full story of everything that I knew and like the basically everything in the blog was what I told her. And then I didn't have any more direct connection with her. There was another player that was sort of coordinating that. And then I just had it passed down to me that, you know, he's lost his job and he's not going to be coaching girls again. So that was that. And then obviously the way everything unfolded. And then in 2019, you know, when we had the meeting with the owners in May 2019, you know, I said to them in the meeting when they were, you know, again, like, oh, we're going to hire this and do this great investigation of everything. Like I said to them, I was just like, you know, how is it going to be? Of course, it's not going to be a neutral investigation if you guys are paying for it. And Greg Kerfoot was like, well, who else do you expect is going to pay for it? And I was like, yeah, fair enough. But like, in my head, I'm like, there's no chance this is going to be an independent investigation if you guys are paying for it, you know? Like, I'm a little bit more savvy now as, like, a 40-year-old as opposed to, like, a, you know, 29-year-old or whatever, believing, like, everything I was told back then, obviously, and having a little bit more insight in, like, how the world works and how they work. And so, but at the same time, you know, like, obviously, I know I've sort of, I'm like the big adversarial, you know, figure in this whole saga or whatever. It's not a position, you know, like in my regular life, I'm not someone that looks for a fight. But like, but anyway, so when the opportunity, you know, when they said, we're going to do this investigation and we're, you know, I mean, again, I was extremely skeptical, but at the same time, you want to try to just believe the best and give an opportunity to try to like work together and, you know, and I was skeptical about if I would participate. And then I, you know, I just was like, you know what, Kira, just like I participated in, at first I wasn't going to give a quote for their statement in May. And then I gave the, you know, I gave a quote and I just genuinely wanted to try to like, okay, like this is, I'm going to take this as like a genuine attempt to like make this situation right. And then, you know, and I'm glad I did that just if for nothing else to, I gave it my best shot to try to give them the benefit of the doubt and work with them. And then, you know, I was actually in Thailand over Christmas last year when I got a text message from one of the reporters that I'd gotten to know during the whole thing last year saying, did you know that the Whitecaps report's dropping tomorrow morning? Sorry. Did you know it's dropping tomorrow morning? And I was like, no one from the club had reached out and told me or, you know, the other two players that were like Eden and Andrea, who were both really instrumental in the whole thing. No heads up whatsoever. Obviously, even if like only I knew because the reporter told me she had been, she had to sign a non-disclosure. So it's not like, you know, she couldn't share anything of what was in the report. And so I just had to sit for like, you know, basically it was midnight my time in Thailand when the report came out. And so I literally had like 20 minutes to read the report, like a 60-page report or whatever it was in, you know, 20 minutes before my phone started ringing off the hook. And I had to, you know, I had to answer all the questions from the reporters. And so, you know, I went into I read it as best I could, obviously focusing on the parts that were relevant to us. But I was, you know, doing like all the media stuff from like midnight until 7 a.m. in Thailand, you know, with no notice. And like that to me, again, was like, all right, like, you know, it's just one of those things that you, like they keep trying to you know, like they've had opportunities to make this right, but they just keep making the, it's like a kid that continues to like make bad choices, you know, like just do the right thing, you know, like just, why is that so difficult? You know, like there's just this arrogance in terms of the way that they've like continued to handle this. And so, yeah, so I read the report and of course, like, nothing, you know, it's the, what's been all over the media is like, oh, you know, the Whitecaps did nothing wrong. They didn't brush anything under, none of the facts that like, that were given in terms of how this is unfolded and the actual reality of any of it was in that report. You know, oh, we didn't do anything wrong in like, I have direct evidence showing what they did in 2017 was a lie, you know, but it just, you just hit the point. Like, when that report came out, it was just like, this is, it's just, it's a total PR job. I could go by, you know, page by page with evidence showing that they're lying again, but it's just, you just hit the point where you're just like, these, it's a waste of time. Like, I'm genuinely glad that I like gave it my best shot to like work with them and whatever, but it's just, again, like little kids making bad choices. And so, you know, it's again, it's kind of just like, all right, that's, they're a corporation and they care about themselves and they don't give two craps about anything. And they're saying everything they're supposed to and that the handbook tells them to say, but there's like nothing genuine behind it. And yeah. And so, you know, I think it's a very generous thing to say that the only thing that they need to improve from 2008 was their communication with us. Like, you know, that's literally like, I don't know, baseball batting somebody in the head and saying that they have a scratch on them that needs to get band-aided, you know, like it's almost such an exaggeration and so far from the truth that it's like, again, you'd laugh only that this is real life and it's affecting real people, you know?
Onto one of the, I guess, one of the more positive things about the whole situation was the fact that fans came out and supported you and the whole movement last year with a couple of walkouts at certain matches in the 2019 season. So what was it like for you? I mean, seeing all these fans just walk out supporting you and the entire movement, what was that like?
Honestly, like, it was probably the, you know, it's funny. I joke around. I started crying in two of the TV interviews last week talking about it. Honestly, like, I get so emotional thinking about it because, like, honestly, I don't know what would have happened. And you know, like, part of it, honestly, was, like I said before, like, I hated Vancouver. I hated just everything was so dark. And you know, just, again, like I said, the way that we were silenced over the last decade, like, it was just a really painful place for me to be back in and to live. And, like, yeah, it was so unexpected. Like, not even on any kind of like anyone's radar that even the idea of any of it when they reached out to us. And yeah, it was just such a powerful visual of, like, you know, almost literally like people carrying you, like, we're not going to let you get silenced. And, you know, just seeing the momentum and, you know, just seeing people care, you know what I mean? Because it's just like, you know, this obviously is like a micro situation affecting us, but like, this is our community. Like, this is, you know, this is our city. And like, these are people in your city that are getting treated like this, you know? And so to just feel like abandoned and alone for like over a decade, and then all of a sudden have these incredible people, you know, when they just want to go to the game and watch it, but they like, they're concerned enough by what they see going on to like step up. And yeah, like I liken it, like I've said this before, like, it's almost like the feeling of like a kid going to the playground every day and getting the crap kicked out of them. And then all of a sudden, just someone coming, you know, like a grand hero coming and just like beating the crap out of the bullies, you know what I mean? And it was honestly, like, it was the most, yeah, like I said, I get really emotional when I think about it, when I talk about it. And I'm just like so grateful. And honestly, like, even with the charges, like, that's happened over the last week, I can say with absolute certainty it would not have happened if the fans hadn't walked out, because I think they made it like a safe space for all of us, you know, like all of us, like those of us that have been fighting the fight, like, it was like feeling like you're being carried, you know, when you're just exhausted trudging up a hill by yourself for so many years. And then, you know, for the victims that were watching things happen, like, you know, I think just for them to see that, you know, this is a safe space and they're not going to have to go through this alone, that there's people supporting them, and that they're going to get their day in court, and that their voice matters. Like, I think it just showed that, like, you know, people's voices matter, you know, like, and yeah, it was amazing. And honestly, I'm not going to say it made, I wish I never went through what I've gone through, but like, just to see and experience that kind of humanity in such a low moment is probably, honest to God, like, if I, you know, die tomorrow, is one of the best moments of like my life, to see people, just to see, like, you know, to go from seeing like the dark of humanity to seeing like the light. It was just, it was incredible. And I'm still, I will forever be so grateful to every single person. And I wish I could give every single fan that walked out of the game like a huge hug, you know, because yeah, they changed lives. Literally, like, they changed lives, and they're the ones, like, those actions are going to have a ripple effect on, you know, the safety of kids in sport for, like, you know, the decades to come.
So you just touched on it there. Obviously, the big news of the last week or so were the 9 offenses charged to Bereda. Hearing that news, that he'd been charged, you know, after your long fight and, you know, struggle, and knowing everyone else's struggle around the problem, what was just your initial reaction once you just heard that news come over last week?
I honestly, like, the system has failed us for so many years that I didn't think anything was going to happen. And I was shocked, like, to see a system function in a way that didn't require, like, us to do the heavy lifting. So yeah, like, I think that it caught me off guard. I was very emotional in terms of, in terms of just like thinking of the journey to this point. Like, you know, I spoke to a couple of the other players, and, you know, we were just emotional. Like, it's been such a long journey. You know, and obviously he hasn't been convicted of anything yet, so it's like obviously important to say that, but just the fact to see, you know, yeah, just to see charges. And I think, you know, if I'm like completely honest, like, just angry too, because, you know, it's, he would still be on the field if I hadn't written that blog, you know, and that's the reality of it, you know, like, no, you know, nothing would have changed, nothing would have happened. And I think just like so angry at everybody that allowed him to stay on the field, and angry that like I had to risk my own like health and well-being and sanity to, you know, to put that blog out, because, you know, it's scary putting yourself like, you know, front and center of a story like this. And so I think like, but, you know, and also too, just like validating as well, where it's just, you know, we're not crazy. Like, you know, everybody that saw this going on behind the scenes and tried to say something and thought that this was so wrong, you know, like almost, yeah, like just seeing the script flip and having everybody that just let this happen have to answer for it, you know, and because I think, yeah, I mean, I just think the criminal charges make it very clear how serious and how egregious the actions that have led to this point have been. And so, yeah, I mean, I think, again, like, there's obviously a ways to go in terms of like if a conviction's going to happen and stuff, but I just think like, just grateful, like I said, because this would not have happened without the fans. And I'm really also grateful for those people that are a part of those charges that, you know, again, like, one of the charges is from 1988. Like, that's a very long time to be sitting on that amount of trauma. And I'm just really grateful all those people are going to have a chance to have their day in court and have their story heard and know that they matter and that their story matters. And I really, really hope, like, I've felt so much healing from, you know, my story getting heard, that I know how healing that is. And I just, you know, I just pray that they get that opportunity as well. And that, you know, it just, yeah, that it just works out the way it's supposed to.
Even though Berardo has been charged, the work still isn't done, right? Like, there's still a long way to go in this.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, the Whitecaps, after the charges were announced, they released a statement. I'm sure you've read it, you know, etched into your brain at this point. What are your thoughts on what the statement said and the way they kind of work? Because we did have Axel Schuster, the CEO, on our last episodes. That was the day before all these charges came out in the statement. So we would have loved, you know, had the opportunity to maybe talk to him about it. But so now that you know, it's been a couple of days, the dust has settled a little bit from the first initial kind of big splash. The Whitecaps released a statement. If you've read it, what are your thoughts on what it said?
I didn't really read, you know, the one thing that stood out to me was like poor Axel, you know, like he hasn't even been with the club for a year and he's the one that's signing off on a statement for like, you know, it just, again, it's just, it's like, it's, like I said, like if it wasn't real life and real people affected, like it's comical, like, you know, it's just, it's so, and like, I think someone said something like, oh, you know, like they're like now all of a sudden we're so brave and courageous and whatever. And like, it, again, you're just like, we never wanted to be brave or courageous. We never should have had to have been brave and courageous, you know, like we just wanted to play soccer. Like we love the sport. We just wanted to be safe and have an opportunity to play. And if something bad happened, we just wanted to have it taken care of properly. And, you know, so at this point, like, it's almost just like patronizing to be called brave and courageous because, you know, like, yeah, like they're just, there's just no reason that we should have had to have been. And I just think, again, to throw a poor guy that hasn't been with the club for even a year front and center of the statement about like the actions of, you know, the four people cowering behind him with like Greg Kerfoot and, you know, Rachel Lewis, Greg Anderson, the Leonard Doozies that have like all been a part of this from 2008. And they're nowhere near the statement. And this poor guy is like, again, I think it just says everything that you need to know about the organization. And for as far as Canada soccer goes, like it's just, it's, you know, good to know that they even, you know, felt it worthy enough to even put out a statement, because I don't even think they bothered to do that for most of last year. So yeah, like, I mean, yeah, just a large eye roll at this point with any statements coming from the organizations. So sorry for being so honest, but
no, we appreciate it. You know, that's why we got you on, you know. We haven't, you know, there's not a lot of opportunities for people to hear complete honesty and, you know, full transparency and everything. So, you know, we appreciate you coming on and, you know, giving us, you know, your take on everything. And we appreciate that greatly.
Yeah, no, yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I appreciate that. Yeah, like I said before, I just really appreciate. Yeah, just again, there's like a lot of facets to the story. So I just think, again, we're just grateful to have a chance to have this story heard.
Hey, what's next for you and the whole kind of coalition you formed towards this investigation? Maybe not towards the investigation necessarily, but also for you off the field. I mean, trying to just with other stuff in life. And you also have Girls Can't Soccer working there as well. So what's next for you in these next couple years, months, days? What's next for you?
I mean, I think I'm just like anybody trying to get through this whole COVID period and get
tell me about it.
So I mean, I think, to be honest, like this year is actually, I don't know, I've heard it from some people, the fact that life just really slowed down this year has been sort of a welcome change of pace, especially after like how crazy last year was. So I've been just, you know, I think for me, like I'm grateful because I feel like I had a lot of healing in this last year. And like I said, like I loved soccer so much when I was younger. And I think that was why, you know, I think I just, you know, I love coaching. I love kids, like, you know, but I just, soccer was just such a painful space for me for such a long time. And so, Girls Can was something I started when I was like 20, basically, like I saw the need for there to be more female coaches involved. And that was the whole premise behind it, was like professional and high level female players coaching girls and just the mentorship aspect and all that. But like that hasn't been something I've really done much of over the last few years. And like I said, I think a lot of it's connected with like the trauma around the whole situation. So I feel that lifting now, I'm doing a lot of like small group stuff just with COVID happening, which has been really positive for me. And I've really, really enjoyed being on the field. And then, you know, I just think I feel like I've gone through a battle and I've come out of it in, you know, one piece, and I feel like I really understand like the whole experience of what, you know, victims go through. And I just think, and I understand how the system works, and I understand why so many people are so traumatized from these sorts of situations. And I think like I have a very clear idea now of the changes that need to happen. And so I think for me, like, you know, just with everything, like if there's one thing soccer taught me, it was like taking adversity and turning into a positive. And I really want to do that with this situation. And just, you know, again, as much as I really want there to be transparency around understanding what happened in our situation, just because I think that, you know, just that blueprint and even accountability, I think for the next generation, like it makes people think twice before brushing stuff under the rug. It also like allows the full understanding of how these situations unfold. And I think that that's the reason why at this point I'm still looking maybe a bit backwards with stuff. But, you know, for me, like the biggest, you know, thing that I was able to do as a player myself was take hard situations and like turn them into a positive. And so that's for me, like a huge, huge focus moving forward is just to, you know, how can I make the soccer world and the athletic world for like the vulnerable, defenseless kids like I was, like, how can we change it so it's positive? You know, like as much as obviously Bob Berarda did a lot of damage to people, like, I don't believe people act like that unless they've like they're hurting in some way themselves. And I think like, you know, even taking, you know, like there's a lot of emotional abuse that is really, really traumatic in terms of what I've learned with talking to people, you know, that I've been connected with through this situation. And I just think we need more, you know, we need to focus more too on coaches being in like a good headspace themselves. Because I don't think coaches maybe even realize the impact that their actions and their words have on players. And also too, like there was a lot of other coaches and people around situations that, I just think like teaching people to be empowered to speak up, like, you know, even there's been a lot of things come out over the last year and talking about like, you know, even with elite athletes, you know, like the Michael Phelps Weight of Gold. I don't know if you guys have heard of that, but it was a documentary about, you know, here's Michael Phelps, who's like this, you know, that's the highest of the high for like Olympic sports and athletic accomplishment. And this guy is, you know, that's done all this stuff is saying that he's broken and like didn't have a good athletic experience. And now it's like his life is, you know, he's having to pick up the pieces in his life after sport. And I think that, I just want to be a part of honestly, like positive change in sport. And, I don't want anyone to go through what we've been through. Like I said, I've heard so many stories and I really, really just want to find a way to like flip this situation into a positive and just take what happened to us and just make sure that like, you know, everybody from whether it's the national team down to like, you know, elite youth players, that they have a positive experience. Because I think, you know, sport in its like highest use is such a wonderful, powerful, amazing tool. And I really want to be a part of making sure that that's the experience that kids have and not even just kids, but like elite athletes that are adults as well. So there's lots of different things that I'm involved with, at this point, sort of testing, like just trying to figure out exactly like what direction I'll focus on. But I know for me, like I need to flip this into a positive and make it something that, yeah, that just, I look back and I'm grateful that it happened. And I think I am to some degree at this point, but it's just, I think that that's my focus moving forward is turning this all into a positive. So.
And just as we do finish up here, is there anything that we may have missed or you kind of want to touch on? Because at the start we said that, you know, our biggest thing that what we want to accomplish from this episode, because obviously it's a bit different than what we typically do on the 90 Plus podcast. We want to educate our listeners. It's a story that no one really knows the full truth, and it's kind of difficult to get a lot of information out. So is there anything that we may have missed or you kind of want to add on, or just sort of anything our listeners deserve to learn about before you wrap this one up?
I want parents and players to know that no matter what you accomplish in the sport, like doing it in a way that is, that you're ensuring that you're in a positive environment is what the most important thing is. I think there's so much attention put on accomplishing things in sport, and like people don't talk about the side of things where if you're not happy on a team and you think that this is the pathway you have to be on to go somewhere, it's not worth it. You know, I also, you know, like, at least for me personally, like, I have zero regrets about not playing for Canada. Like, I didn't give up my integrity, you know, and when you're out of the sporting realm and you look back, like, I'm so proud of my career in the sense that, like, I never compromised my integrity to accomplish anything. And I just really, if people are at those forks in the road where they're worried that they're gonna, by doing the right thing, that like they feel like they're not gonna accomplish something, I just want to really encourage them, like, you know, just to speak up and to do the right thing, and like, you'll always feel like it's a win, you know, like years afterwards. And I think that that's what it's all about. And, you know, and I just think like the final thing, like, again, the focus, as much as like, this is like a harrowing story in so many capacities, like, I really want the focus to be on what the fans did. Just because, like I said, I think that's how things change. Like those things matter. And just, I think that this has been such a year of like turmoil with, you know, but not even turmoil, but like positive, where I think people are saying enough is enough, whether it's like the Black Lives Matter movement or, you know, just all the different sort of like the political unrest that's gone on this year. And I think, you know, things don't change by the group or the victims' voices. You know, like, I can go on till I'm blue in the face, but nothing, what's going to change this is going to be like the fans, you know, like it's never going to be the group that's getting persecuted that's going to be the change. It's the people outside of that. And so that's the point of focus in the story for me. Like, what I want to focus on is just, you know, be people in your lives that, you know, are standing up for people and that are giving people that don't have a voice, because I think at the end of the day, like, you were all a community and it affects all of us. And the more that we can lift up other people around us, the, you know, the better a world we live in, whether it's the soccer world or the, you know, your community or whatever. So, I mean, again, like, I think anytime I do anything with the story, I always just want to end by like thanking the fans. Yeah. Because like I said, like, they literally changed lives in what they did. And I think that, like, again, it's a beautiful story in a way in terms of focusing on that. So, again, just a huge thank you to everybody in Vancouver and even like the Timbers fans. And I know LAFC fans walked out of games. Just, I personally feel so grateful. And I really, truly, it sounds like really cheesy, but I feel like it gave me like the city back and feeling that there's good people in Vancouver. So, yeah. So thank you to the fans. And I think that, like I said, it's in terms of, you know, now with these criminal charges, like, I think, again, it's thanks to the fans. So, yeah. So again, and thank you guys so much for, you know, caring enough to have me on. So.
Oh, of course. Thank you so much for coming on. We're extremely honored to have you on the show and to be able to spread awareness to the situation, you know, spread the story, educate our fans, educate ourselves as well. I only knew about this story in 2019 and the 2017 incident. So, yeah, thank you so much for coming on the show and giving your thoughts on the situation. We wish you the best of luck. Some things are more important than football, and this is definitely one of those things. So we wish you the best of luck, Kira, and thank you so much for coming on the 90 Plus podcast.
Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. Again, yeah, thank you very much. And yeah, really, just, you know, you say you don't want to be considered brave and courageous, but, you know, whichever way we go about it, you know, we do thank you for your actions and stepping up and standing up. You know, the fans walked out, but they might not have if it wasn't for, you know, the things that you've wrote and the things that you've said and everything. So, you know, again, it's really been an honor having you on. It's something important, something that, you know, not a lot everyone knows a complete story of. So if there's anything that, you know, our listeners can get out of today, it's, you know, what we heard here today, you know, that's what we hope our listeners can kind of resonate with and let that sit with them for a little bit. So again, Kara, thank you for joining us on the 90 Plus podcast. We've loved having you on. And we do wish you the best of luck with everything moving forward and a happy and safe holiday season.
Thanks, guys.